Your government, love it or hate it, just handed out a lot of your money, and they are hoping that it changes the subject. The 2019 federal budget was a bit of a mess on the floor of the House of Commons on Tuesday, with conservatives first attempting to delay the document's release, failing at that, and then staging protest votes to delay Finance Minister Bill Morneau's speech. A speech he eventually gave, by the way, amid interruptions and all sorts of posturing from both sides. If you've been following Canadian politics for the past 6 weeks, you probably sighed. And if you haven't, you probably sighed and then tuned out because you were looking for actual policy and not theater. And that's why we're here.
We come into this budget 2019, having had very positive economic results over the last 3.5 years. We made the decision back in 2015 to invest.
Of all that theoretical money the Liberals just promised, and there was a promise for just about everyone, what actually matters? What will make a difference to Canada's future, to the upcoming election, but most of all to actual people who are looking for help buying a home, paying for medication, getting to work on time, or finding a new job? What is the impact of this budget on the ground? And will it, for Trudeau's government, help change the subject? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. John Geddes is the Ottawa bureau chief for Maclean's. We found him in the lockup as soon as it opened after the budget was delivered. Hey, John.
Hey, how are you doing, Jordan?
I am doing extremely well. You guys are sifting through a ton of numbers. When you head into lockup and you sit down to dig into this budget, what are you looking for?
I've done a ridiculous number of budgets. I'd be embarrassed to tell you how many budgets I've got.
That's why we ask you.
Many of them. And I always have the same strategy, and that's to try to figure out the difference between the words and the numbers. There's always a kind of rhetorical packaging of the budget, and then there are the numbers that go behind it, and they very rarely dovetail neatly. There's some relationship between what the government wants to talk about and what they want to spend on, but it's rarely a sort of a neat convergence, you know. So the interesting thing is to look, well, where are they spending that they haven't been talking too much about, and where are they not spending too much where they have been talking a lot? So that's kind of how I go at it.
So right off the top then, what is the rhetorical flourish on this budget? How do they want it framed?
Well, they want it framed as investing in the middle class. That was the phrase that Finance Minister Bill Morneau used over and over. That's such a general expression. I don't know how, you know, general listeners will hear it, but the Liberals have talked so much about the middle class for so long now, going back to 2015, that I think it's almost just background noise now when they talk middle class. You know, I think they need to be a little sharper to actually get that rhetoric to click through. But the specific subjects that he wanted to talk about were training, pharmacare, and home buying. Those were the ones that seemed to be the most the priorities that they wanted to push across. And there is money for all those things, but it's not the most money in the budget. Most money is going other places.
So let's first talk about those things, just because I think a lot of people need some help parsing this budget and what it'll actually mean to them. So if I'm a normal Canadian, like a lot of people in this country, who are looking for, as I understand it, some real help in terms of buying a house from this budget, what am I getting?
There's a new program for first-time home buyers, and it basically means that the CMHC kind of buys in on your house, sort of subsidizes to a small degree your first home purchase. And there's also going to be an allowance for people to take more money out of their RSPs to buy a house. So these are modest measures. They're not the biggest measure in the budget, but for sure, I guess if you're a first-time home buyer, you're going to be interested in that, no doubt about it.
And pharmacare, which was another one that was kind of at least in the run-up to the budget, targeted as something that would be big for families across Canada.
Huge, you would have thought, but not really. There's just a few tens of millions of dollars to get an agency set up that would be the sort of framework, if you like, or the sort of skeleton for a federal national pharmacare program, but not much flesh on those bones. What there is about $1 billion for accessible high-cost drugs for rare diseases. That's a niche, but a big niche. But on the broad idea of some kind of universal or at least close to universal pharmacare program, what you really just have is a kind of a marker laid down that Ottawa would like to have an agency set up. They'd like to start drafting up a list of the kinds of prescription drugs that would be covered, and they want to be in a position to coordinate or cooperate or negotiate with the provinces on that. But really, not much more than that. It's really, that's a more a marker for future stuff than a clear picture of what they want to do now.
That's what I like about budgets, is that you always kind of have to parse the language in terms of what's being said about a given subject with what's actually going to change. So I wanted to ask you, as you kind of went through the lines of this in the lockup, what did you notice that you could see having an impact in the short term that people will notice changing?
Easily, I don't know if people will notice this so much, but easily the most significant short-term spending that was not in any way foreshadowed. I didn't see any leaks or speculation or rumors about this at all, is the municipal stuff. There's $2.2 billion for municipalities for short-term infrastructure, and that's going out the door very fast. Not in the fiscal year that's coming up, which would be 2019-20, but in the fiscal year that we're still just finishing up this spring, 2018-19. So that's $2.2 billion right away. And then another billion for the municipalities for sort of energy efficiency programs. That's going to the Federation of Canadian Municipalities. The interesting thing there, Jordan, is that the Liberals have had a really rocky relationship with some of the provinces, especially some of the new provincial governments, and they've had a hard time moving infrastructure money quickly, partly because you have to negotiate these agreements with other levels of government. So this looks like they see the municipalities, you know, city governments especially, as still pretty good allies. And they think that if they just pump money straight to those municipal governments, they can get some infrastructure money spent fast in this election year. And, you know, this can be everything from, you know, recreation projects, recreation facilities in municipalities, local roads, local airports, all kinds of stuff. And then this other whole fund of $1 billion for energy efficiency, both in big municipal buildings and also in programs that municipalities pump out to homeowners. So this is interesting because it was not flagged that I saw before the budget. It's a lot of money, arguably the biggest package of new money in the budget. And there it is, all going straight to the level of government that you could see as the most likely ally for the federal Liberals in a climate where they're seeing a lot of friction and tension with provincial governments.
And to your point, it's coming right away. So this isn't, because we're going to talk about an election year budget in a little while, and this isn't one of those like, well, we're announcing this, so vote for us because it'll come. This is now.
No, it's not that at all. It's now, and it's really now. It isn't even in the dawning fiscal year, you know, the one that starts in the spring. It's the one that's just wrapping up. So this money's going to be pumped out fast, gives those cities and towns a chance to spend the money really quickly.
Was there anything else on a personal level or on a level that any group of Canadians will notice right away that the government really seemed to be making a priority of?
I would say two things, and they go at sort of different ends of the demographic spectrum. For younger people, they've put quite a lot into making student loans more affordable. I also didn't see any advance rumors about that one. $1.7 billion over 6 years, and it's a program where people who have student loans will be able to avoid having interest charges pile up for the first 6 months after they're out of school, and then also pay a lower rate of interest as they're paying the loans off over the years after they're in the workforce. It's a really significant program for students, yeah. And it will affect about 1 million students who are already, or former students who are paying off their debt, and about 200,000 more a year. It's very noticeable because this is a younger part of the demographic. Trudeau did great with those voters in 2015, and most people who have been looking at sort of demographic trends think there'll be a lot more people in that millennial generation voting in the 2019 election. So if you want to be cynical and see this as election year stuff, that student loan program is fits nicely with a key part of Liberal messaging in the election, the sort of youth part of the Trudeau vote. And then there's a very significant improvement in the low-income seniors benefit. It's about $1.8 billion over 6 years, giving seniors who still work and have fairly low incomes a chance to keep more of that income. This is a very unheralded part of the Liberal program, but I think quite an important one. They've enhanced the guaranteed income supplement quite a lot since they came to power. Never gets anywhere near as much attention as, say, the Canada Child Benefit. But for older people, especially older people on low incomes, it's been important. And they just continue pouring more money into it. Again, not something that I saw people talking about in the chatter and buzz before the budget, but there it is, a big item, arguably the second biggest item in this budget, and you know, significant for low-income seniors. And again, if you want to think elections, seniors vote. You know, they're a very reliable voting bloc. They right. vote in large numbers. And so maybe, you know, again, maybe this is a nod towards a part of the electorate the Liberals are courting for the fall.
I'm looking at a list that you guys at Maclean's have put together about the really big ticket items in this budget. And it doesn't seem to me, but I wanted to ask you, is there an overarching vision to this budget? Because we talked a lot about the gender equality budget that the Liberals delivered a while ago. And I wonder if there's anything that stands out to you as kind of a vision of a vision for Canada.
I think no is the answer to answer that. That seems yeah. kind of blunt and curt. But the fact is, when you see a title on a budget like investing in the middle class, which is so broad and vague and kind of, you know, mushy.
It's boilerplate, right?
Yeah, it signals in a way that they didn't really know quite what to say about this budget. And so when I look down the stuff, I think oh, there's some infrastructure, some seniors benefits, some stuff for students, some stuff for First Nations. Very important, actually. We haven't mentioned that, but important spending for First Nations and Inuit child services, a really key thing.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure, of course. I'd be happy to. A lot of this goes back to the so-called Jordan's Principle, stemming from a court case, tragic court case involving a First Nations kid from, I think, Norway House in Manitoba. And really what it boils down to is the commitment was made that we should be working to close the gap on child services between the sort of general population and on-reserve populations. So, you know, this is in things like child welfare services, health services for kids, education for kids. And the Liberals have made big promises in that area and some progress, but there are a lot of impatient people on that file, so they're pumping another $1.4 billion into that for both First Nations and Inuit child services. I think that's enormously important.
That's a significant amount of money on this budget.
It is. It is a very significant amount. I think it clocks in at number four on our list of spending items. And it's the kind of thing that I wouldn't want to be cynical about it. You know, I think people who work in this field, including politicians and bureaucrats and journalists who occasionally visit First Nations, are usually aghast at the conditions for a lot of First Nations kids and Inuit kids. And any amount is probably, you know, is could be very well spent in that area. So it's good to see that. But on your point about is there a theme to the budget, well, how do you fit that, for example, with the theme of investing in the middle class? For that matter, improving low-income seniors' benefits, they're by definition not in the middle class. Most of those people forgiving, you know, debt to indigenous groups who have negotiated treaties is another thing they're doing. A lot of this stuff is not really, it's not easy to put it under the heading of middle class investment. So yeah, these are all, I think, worthwhile things in and of themselves. I would have trouble looking at any of these big ticket items, you know, investing in the high cost of drugs for rare diseases. Well, that's good. But is that investing in the middle class? Like, I don't think so. So what we have here is a grab bag of defensible, sometimes very, you know, self-evidently important items, but how do you make them fit with some kind of a pre-election messaging? How do you make them part of a thematic approach that the government can take to the whole package of federal spending? I just don't think it works that way.
Given that there's no overarching theme or vision to the budget, really, what do you think it says about the government's approach to the upcoming election and whether or not it seems like they're trying to move in one way or another?
Yeah, it's fascinating. Normally in a budget week, the budget speech, the finance minister's speech, is easily the most important statement from the government about what it wants people thinking about, what it's thinking about. But this week, maybe wasn't like that, because the day before the budget, Prime Minister Trudeau got up in the House to talk about the horrific mass shooting in New Zealand, one of the worst things I've ever heard of happening. And he gave quite a fiery speech.
And yet, while the majority of our citizens welcome these newcomers with open arms, small, toxic segments peddle the belief that greater diversity is a weakness. The irony is that these fringe groups say they despise Daesh, Al-Qaeda, Boko Haram, and others. But they spew hatred and incite violence and murder the innocent just the same. They are no better than those they claim to hate.
Not a typical, just expression of grief, but a more pointed speech about the need to push back against intolerance and anti-immigrant bigotry, anti-Semitic, anti-Islam, anti-gay, anti-black. It was a quite a rousing, intense kind of speech from the Prime Minister, more than I would have expected for the moment. And it made me wonder whether or not the Prime Minister isn't thinking that his messaging will be more about the kind of moral standing of his government, the way it looks at those big identity issues in society, rather than the more prosaic stuff about the middle class, about income security and the economy. I'm not suggesting that he was being purely opportunistic and sort of picking up that moment, but it did show him in a much more resolute kind of voice than we've heard since the Jody Wilson-Raybould SNC-Lavalin stuff broke. So here I'm thinking, maybe a month from now or even a year from now, we'll be thinking back to that statement from Trudeau as his attempt at a turnaround moment, rather than the budget speech and the budget itself, which was obviously what more of us were focusing on as we went into this week.
Well, that's right. The next thing I was going to ask you will this change the subject? Does it have the chance to do that?
I don't think it changes the subject. I think it possibly, at its best, this budget will remind some Canadians about what they've kind of liked about the Liberal government up till now, which is that they have had a sort of incremental approach to improving services in some areas, working away at things. We've talked about some of them here, like student loans, low-income seniors, retraining and skills upgrade stuff. That's all decent stuff. It's not the kind of thing that I think that sways a lot of votes, but it may remind some people who were kind of oriented or leaning towards the Liberals in the first place about what they liked about them before all this SNC-Lavalin, Jody Wilson-Raybould stuff got into the air. So maybe a bit of a base restoring move, but I doubt it's the kind of thing that will swing people who are already persuaded that they didn't like the government anymore because of what they're hearing on that ethical front.
On that note, is there anything in this budget that you see being a line of attack for the opposition?
Yeah, the line of attack, there'll be two lines of attack. For the NDP, I think it will be that pharmacare in the Liberal vision is much less certain, much less clear than the NDP version of pharmacare, which is basically to extend universal health care to include prescription drugs. I think that'll be the NDP line of attack. The Tory line of attack will be about the deficit. They continue to think that Morneau and Trudeau are weak because they promised 3 years of modest deficits and then a balanced budget, and instead they've delivered much bigger deficits and no real path to balance. So I think those lines of attack from the opposition parties are pretty clear. I'm not sure either of those are going to resonate in a big way with swaths of Canadian voters, but again, they may be the kind of thing that appeal to the base of those opposition parties.
Is this really, at the end of the day, kind of an opportunity to give everybody a little something? Because as I look further and further down this list, you can just kind of check them off one by one.
You mean sort of check them off in terms of, oh, here's something for seniors, here's something for students, here's something for people who may be worrying about, upgrading their skills and a changing economy. Sure, yeah, there is a little bit there for a lot of people. But in a way, isn't that kind of the nature of the federal government? I mean, isn't a kind of a focused thing where you're thinking about, oh, the federal government is for fill in the blanks. It's a government that has to provide services for all kinds of people. And in a way, every budget is going to have a smattering of things for different people. I guess the question is whether or not in that smattering, there are enough sort of highlighted, underscored items that people might wake up and pay attention and go, wait, this isn't business as usual. I'm not sure there's anything in this budget that quite rises to that level. Some interesting stuff, but nothing that compares with, for example, the Canada Child Benefit in the first level budget that really was the introduction of a big, new, noticeable program.
This is kind of a business as usual budget.
I don't know if I would say business as usual, but it's more of the norm for the federal government, even for an activist government, to be making incremental changes than dramatic, sort of signature changes. It's really only in the life of any government, how many big things like that do you have? For the Mulroney government, there's free trade in the GST. For the Harper government, for the Creighton government, there was balancing the books. For the Harper government, there was putting out some of their early electoral financing and other sort of ethics reforms. There just aren't a lot of moments where any normal kind of majority government makes a big splash. Liberals made a pretty big splash in their very early days, particularly with Canada Child Benefit. And it's been hard for them to find other gaps where they can do something that dramatic again.
What's the difference in general between a normal government budget and a budget 6 months before an election?
That's a great question. I've never really thought about that. I'm not sure if you go back through history, you'd be able to see a sort of a pattern. But I would guess that it's usually that a government is going to try to think about where it's hoping to expand its vote. You know, where are you hoping to grow your vote? Or if you're in a defensive posture, where you're hoping to shore up a vote that you're afraid of losing. And by that measure, I guess you'd have to say this budget looks like the Liberals are hoping students, older people who are on fairly low incomes, maybe people who are conscious of seeing construction cranes and road pavers out in the cities and towns they work in, that's where the spending is going. So it's possible that they see, you know, openings there for shoring up or even expanding their vote in the fall election.
Thanks, John.
Okay, Jordan, thank you.
John Geddes, Ottawa Bureau Chief at Maclean's. That was The Big Story. For more from us, you know where we are at thebigstorypodcast.ca and frequencypodcastnetwork.com, on your Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN, on your Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at FrequencyPods, and everywhere you get podcasts, all your favorite apps, we're on them, I promise. If we're not, tweet at me, because I'd be shocked. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.